Imagine earning continuing education credits while doing exactly what you're doing right now. Well, you can. Gable Media has revolutionized the way you earn your continuing education credits with a groundbreaking approach. Forget running around town and scouring the internet for credit-worthy courses. Fulfill your CE requirements effortlessly by listening to engaging podcasts just like the one you're listening to now. Our podcasts are designed to educate, entertain, and inspire, all in a user-friendly environment. But wait, there's more. Architects, Gable Media is also approved as an AIA Continuing Education Services provider. Upon completion, we handle everything, from reporting your hours directly to the AIA to storing your certificates in your personal Gable Media profile for your self-reporting needs. So follow the link in the show notes and start earning your credits in the most innovative and entertaining way possible with Gable Media.
Entree Architect membership has monthly training, unlimited access to all our business resources, and a private member forum with hundreds of entrepreneur architects just like you. Everything you need to build a better business is available now at entrearchitect.com. My name is Mark R. LePage, and you are listening to Entree Architect Podcast, where I speak with inspiring, passionate people who share their knowledge and expertise, all to help you build a better business as a small firm entrepreneur architect. This is episode 259, and today I'm talking about small firm networks with Christian Jordan, co-founder of Jam Collective. This episode of Entree Architect Podcast is supported by our platform sponsors, Gusto. Gusto is refreshingly easy payroll, benefits, and HR for the modern small business. Arcat, the online resource delivering quality building material information, CAD details, BIM, specifications, and so much more at arcat.com. And FreshBooks, the cloud-based accounting software that makes running your small firm easy, fast, and secure. Spend less time on accounting and more time doing the work you love. Christian Jordan, welcome to Entree Architect Podcast.
Hi, Mark. Thanks for having me.
It's good to have you here. Christian Jordan is an architect and a principal at PJA Architecture in Philadelphia, in Pennsylvania. He's also co-founder of Jam Collective, which is a new organization building a collaborative network for small firms. Jam Collective was the winner of the 2018 Charette Venture Group Architecture Business Plan Competition. So they were the winners, which is why I invited Jordan here, because I want to talk about Jam and what it is. It's a very innovative idea, and it's exciting. So listen up. And as an aside, registration for the 2019, this year's business plan competition, is happening right now. The registration actually is done. But if you got in on registration, we're in the process with that right now. So watch for updates on that. Jam Collective creates opportunity for small firms to, quote, stay small, act big, and do good. Sounds good, right? Which is very much in alliance with the work that we're doing here at Entree Architect and the work that CVG is doing. So I'm enthused about what you're doing, Jordan. Christian, sorry.
It's okay. It's
I'm sure that happens all the time, right?
Yep.
Okay. Well, let's roll into your origin story.
Sure.
Let's go back to where you discovered architecture. What inspired you to become an architect, and tell us that story to where you are today.
Sure. Okay. So my father, Phil, is an architect. He and I are co-owners of PJA Architecture. And I guess the honest answer would be that in high school, my guidance counselor tells me that I'm not good enough to play professional baseball, and that I should probably get serious about what the rest of my life looks like.
Was that counselor correct?
Oh yeah. She was correct. Yeah. In high school, the ball starts moving a little bit faster and everybody's throwing a little bit harder, and you're kind of left like, well, maybe that dream has to die at some point.
Yeah.
So then she mentions, well, your dad's an architect and you're good at math. Why don't you think about architecture?
Of course.
Right. And, yeah. So kind of growing up, seeing what my dad had done, and he started the firm in 1993. So in high school, I was graduating in 2000. So he had a little more than 5 years under his belt, having his own firm, and just kind of watching the effort that he put in, what he was able to provide for the family, and thinking that while he always said school was very difficult for him, and wanting to maybe take him at his word and give it a try, I applied to a bunch of architecture schools in and around Philadelphia, got into a number of them, and ended up at Philadelphia University, which was the College of Science and Textiles at the time, and is now Jefferson University. So I may use any of those interchangeably as we talk. Yeah, and went through the 5-year Bachelor of Architecture program there. Was interning with Phil at the time, and decided that it was probably best for me to take a detour and work for perhaps a larger firm, which I did while I was in school, and then immediately upon graduation. And sometime after that, the opportunity presented itself for me to come back, and looking back on it, it was probably a good thing because the recession was coming. Mm-hmm. Nobody knew it at the time, but it gave Phil and I a chance to kind of recalibrate and refocus and steer PJA through the recession so that we came out a little bit leaner, a little bit more efficient, and kind of, you know, the blood, sweat, and tears is a real thing when you're trying to drum up work and nobody's answering calls, and you're kind of wondering where the next project might come from. After graduation, I kind of back up a little bit. I started teaching in 2006, and that was more or less like an experimental modeling course. It was based loosely on my thesis in school at the time, and that gave me a chance to kind of cultivate some real relationships with students that were graduating, and kind of with an eye towards what the culture of PJA might eventually become. Obviously, there was always some investment that Phil had in me as his son, but wanting to kind of pay that forward and make sure that anybody that we were employing also got a chance to benefit from that. So the teaching was good. It was a lot of fun. Through the recession, I ended up teaching a couple studios, trying to make some ends meet. And most recently, I'm now teaching a professional management course at Jefferson, which kind of more closely aligns with my role here at PJA. Now, when I got licensed in 2012, the idea was, okay, if I'm going to be a co-owner in this thing, I can't simply do what Phil does faster or younger or more efficient, because where were we going? So we took a look at what role I might be able to better service the firm in, and the business development side was absolutely where we probably needed the most effort. So, you know, over the last 3-4 years, I've been steadily branching more in that direction, less architecture with a capital A on the production side.
Yeah.
But absolutely looking for opportunities. You know, one of the great things about PJA are the clients that we work with, and wanting to take the service that we provide them and offer that to other clients, and kind of diversify, so that setting ourselves up such that if and when the economy does slow down a little bit, we're not feeling the sting as bad as we did in 08, 09, 2010. And that kind of gets us to today. I spent 3 years as the AIA Young Architect Regional Director for Pennsylvania. That term just ended last year. And one of the things I'm kind of most proud about there was implementing the Firms Fostering Emerging Professionals Recognition Award at the AIA Pennsylvania level. And what we do there is we ask firms to submit answers to a questionnaire, 3 kind of distinct areas that show real investment and effort to foster the emerging professionals that are in their firms. An emerging professional and a principal in the firm both have to submit so that we can do some follow-up. And that has been about 40, 50 firms a year since 2016. And that's kind of one of like the legacy things that I hope continues to go further now that I'm stepping down as the regional director. But the idea of fostering the relationships and the growth of emerging professionals is a big one. And I think that's kind of the thing that's been impressed upon me the most. Everybody's like, how's working with your dad? And we get along great. We've got a really good relationship, but that kind of making sure that I'm seeing things that I otherwise might not get a chance to, if I was in another firm, because I am his son, is something that I want to kind of continue to pass along.
Yeah.
Regardless of the relationship.
How is it working with your dad? No, that's not the question.
Everybody has that.
That's not the question. Well, I do want to go back there. That's not the question I want to ask.
Okay.
But I think that there are other architects who are listening who may be in similar situations where maybe their mom or dad is leading a firm and they're considering moving into that firm and taking on some sort of role there with an expectation that you become a leader. Do you have any advice for those people that sort of are in that position on how best to approach that?
Yeah, well, from my experience, the best policy is to be honest and open and not take anything for granted, right? Not assume that... you know, as much as I love my dad, and not assume that he's always looking out in my best interest. It sounds terrible, but when you break it down and say, okay, this is a business decision. Mm-hmm. What is our succession plan? What are the pitfalls that we might run into? It really opens up a much greater opportunity to have a discussion about where the firm's going, where it's been, what it may not do the best, and what it does do the best, and how as a partnership, you can push that forward. You know, it's a relationship and you have to break down any type of familial bonds, essentially, that exist, and just say, okay, we are going into this as business partners. And what does that look like? And Phil and I have had a really good relationship just kind of as professionals. That's been helpful, and that allows me to walk into his office and just say, hey, I don't think this is working like we thought it did. What are your thoughts? You know, and then he can come to me and say, you know, what we did on this project, or you know, this opportunity, we've got to try, you know, redouble our efforts. And that communication is key, and I'm sure most people attest to that as being key to most relationships.
Yeah, I mean, was that open, honest relationship an intentional? What did you establish some sort of structure day one, or was that something that you learned through a couple of mistakes and some experiences, and or did you sort of know that going in that needed to be there?
I think we always knew it needed to be there, but once we got an attorney involved and a financial planner involved and an accountant involved, having them counsel us was also kind of like a little eye-opening. Like, yeah, we really should have this buttoned up, and we do need an operator's agreement that we are both signing and that we both, you know, revisit, and we have annual meetings about the state of the firm and where we're going. So it was a little bit of both, but it's just a matter of kind of knowing that you're working towards the same thing and not taking the other one for granted. Mm-hmm. Right, because that relationship of father son, mother daughter, mother son, you know, father daughter, that you think kind of can take care of a lot of issues that pop up, but it actually might exacerbate the mm-hmm. problem if people are making assumptions or are not completely upfront with what they're feeling.
Do you have employees?
Yes.
Yeah. How many employees? Three employees.
Yep.
Yeah, were they there from the beginning, or were they hired after you became partners?
They were hired after I became partners. And the idea there was, if I'm going to drive kind of more of the business development side and the culture, that I had a hand in the hiring, the interviewing process, and that I think has been instrumental in witnessing Phil giving up some of the control that he mm-hmm. had as a sole proprietor and basically saying, okay, I trust you to do this. And if we miss, yeah, you're gonna share in some of the burden and the pain of perhaps having to fire somebody, which we haven't had to do. But just kind of saying, okay, if we're gonna run a firm together, you know, we're gonna share the responsibilities, and you're gonna take the lead on this one.
Yeah. And so those roles that were established up front, did you know that those were the roles that you excelled in, or was that sort of a look at where is Phil strong and where mm-hmm. can I sort of fill in the gaps?
It's a little bit of both. As his son, I can kind of tell you where his weaknesses lie.
Yeah, you have some experience with him.
Sure, but saying that to his face is another thing.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. But that's why also, I asked that, yeah.
Yeah, but then also being around, I saw where his strengths were and where he really excelled. And luckily, his strengths aren't necessarily mine.
Yeah.
And my strengths aren't necessarily his. So that kind of complementary relationship has been good. And I kind of always had an idea that as a people person, that might be something that I might eventually fit into in a firm, kind of that larger firm that I was with, seeing how stratified a lot of the responsibilities were. You have HR, you have your business development, you have marketing, you have hiring principals, project architects, project managers. And that was helpful in kind of saying, okay, in this small firm, all of those roles kind of exist, but the responsibilities are borne by two people or three people, and that's it. So you can't negate any of those simply because you don't have the staff to do it. You have to kind of say, okay, who on staff fits these roles best, and how do we kind of all move this forward?
Yeah, I think that's very wise decision that you had made. And that, what you just described about, you know, a small firm having to, you can't not do some of those things. If you're in business, there are certain things that you must do, mm-hmm. Which sort of is a perfect opportunity to get into JAM and what JAM is.
Yeah.
We'll be right back to our conversation after this quick break to say thank you to our platform sponsors at Entree Architect, Gusto, RCAP, and FreshBooks. Payroll and benefits are hard, especially when you're a small business. You don't have time to be an expert in things like taxes and regulations. And old school payroll providers, they just don't get it. They aren't built for the way that we work today. Gusto is making payroll, benefits, and HR easy for small businesses. They're different. Modern technology does the heavy lifting, so it's easy for you to get things right. You no longer have to be a big company to get the great technology, those great benefits, and the great service for your team. To help support this show, the Entree Architect podcast, Gusto is offering our listeners an exclusive limited-time deal. Sign up today, and you'll get three months free. Once you run your first payroll, just go to entrearchitect.com/gusto and claim your free 3 months of payroll processing today. entrearchitect.com/gusto. For years, when I needed information on manufacturers' products, I headed straight to Google. Then I sifted through the hundreds of results to find the one or two that might be the link to the product that I'm looking for. And more often than not, the link was not what I was seeking. It was outdated or didn't meet my requirements, so I went back to the search engine and started all over again. And this could take all afternoon to find the two or three products that I need. Does this sound familiar? I know you've done this. There is a better way. It's called RCAT. RCAT.com. ARCAT.com. Find what you're looking for in seconds. Building product information, BIM, CAD, and custom specifications using their exclusive tool, SpecWizard. So make RCAT part of your efficient project workflow. Just type in entrearchitect.com/RCAT in the internet browser and add that to your favorites. Just click that little favorites button, make RCAT your favorites, and then visit RCAT for every project. Make it part of your workflow. Find what you need fast and make more money on every project. entrearchitect.com/RCAT. That's entrearchitect.com/ARCAT. FreshBooks makes it simple to send invoices, post your expenses automatically, track your time for your whole team, by project, and get organized with reports, communication, and notifications. Getting started with FreshBooks is ridiculously easy. Most people send their first invoice just seconds after starting their free trial. And the same goes for time tracking, managing expenses, collaborating with contractors, and viewing financial reports. It's fast and easy. And if you need help at any time, free award-winning customer service is just a phone call or an email away. And if you ever have second thoughts, don't worry. On top of our free trial here for Entree Architect listeners, you get a 30-day money-back guarantee so you don't ever have to worry about choosing FreshBooks. So give FreshBooks a try. Try it free for 30 days. Just visit entrearchitect.com/freshbooks and then let them know that we sent you by sharing Entree Architect in the How Did You Hear About Us section. That's entrearchitect.com/freshbooks to access your free, unlimited 30-day trial. Gusto, RCAT, and FreshBooks. Please visit our platform sponsors today and thank them for supporting you, the Entree Architect community. So first of all, let's explain what JAM is and how it was born.
Sure. So JAM was born out of the AIA's Practice Innovation Lab, which took place in Crystal City, Virginia at a 1776 incubator space. They're a co-working space that specifically looks for startup firms and offers them resources within their co-working model. But the Innovation Lab invited, it was an open call for applications, and they accepted 60 people, broke them into 10 teams of six. And a couple months prior to going down to Crystal City, they sent out an email introducing the team. And we had a chance to have a couple phone calls, kind of understand who's, again, looking at it like small firm mentality, where do the strengths lie? Mm-hmm. When we meet down in Crystal City, how do we leverage those strengths?
So what was the application for? Because it wasn't, you weren't applying with an idea, right? You were applying as an individual.
Correct. Exactly. You had to put a little manifesto for what the future of architecture looked like. And I think I completely missed the mark on that based on where JAM is and what my particular manifesto was. But then, your CV, why you think you might be a good fit for this innovation lab. It was the inaugural one. It was actually the Young Architecture Forum that is part of the AIA. They advocate for architects that are licensed less than 10 years. And every 5 years, they have a summit. And 2017 was going to be a fifth-year anniversary and this summit. And Evelyn Lee and Milan Durham set up this innovation lab. So the summit was going to be this innovation lab. And you applied as an individual, and they curated the teams among Evelyn and Milan, along with, I guess, the planning committee. And they were diverse geographically, diverse gender, race, ethnicity, but we were almost all architects still. So that was good in that we all saw the potential problems facing the practice. But in terms of like true innovation, it probably could have benefited even more from outsiders. And that's kind of that was like the big takeaway.
So were there outsiders in the lab or were they everybody who applied were architects?
Almost everybody that was there was an architect or had some design background. There were some data scientists there. There were some professional academics, some PhDs, some professors. But by and large, we all had architecture degrees, bachelor's or master's. So we get there on a Thursday night. We're introduced to everybody. We meet our team. And then Friday is working sessions that are punctuated by keynote speakers. So like James Patton of Patton Studio and mm-hmm. Susan Chin, the executive director of the Design Trust for Public Space. They were among the speakers that spoke about design and innovation. And I remember we could sign up for a consultation with one of the keynote speakers. And we signed up for Susan Chin at, I think, 2:30 on Friday. So by Saturday morning at 9 a.m., all of the teams were going to be assembled and they were going to pitch what the future of architectural business practice looked like. So 2:30 on Friday, we have Susan Chin come in. We're in a little 8x8 room with a glass on, I think, three sides. And our, you know, our laptops are precariously perched on our knees. And we have our whiteboards and markers going. And Susan comes in and I start talking about what we think our pitch is. And I can see that I'm losing her. I'm starting to ramble. Eric, as all architects know.
So you did some brainstorming prior?
Oh yeah, that was Friday. So we'd have these keynote speakers, we'd get back into this little room, we'd huddle, we'd talk mm-hmm. a little bit more about it, and every step of the way we thought, wow, we're getting closer, or that keynote speaker spoke exactly to what we were trying to do. Right. And when Susan comes in and I'm talking and I'm rambling and I'm like, oh, and we can do this and we can also do this and maybe it's a little bit of this, and just, you know, having a flashback to those horrible studio moments where you know the jury's not really interested or they're paying attention and you've lost them and you're just kind of talking. And at one point I just kind of folded my arms and said, but I think we've missed the mark. and Susan looks at me and she says, yeah, you're gonna have to be more punchy than this. And
Was it because there just wasn't a core to it?
Exactly. There wasn't a, this is the mm-hmm. idea, yep. right? We were pointing to pie charts on the walls and graphs and, you know, little diagrams. And
there was no story yet.
No, there wasn't at this point. And we had a small conversation and then Susan left. And Mike Anglin, one of our founders, just kind of dejectedly puts his head down in his book. We had two books for that. One was Blue Ocean Strategies, and the other one was 10 Types of Innovation. And he just kind of buries his head in the innovation book. And he lifts it and he says, I don't know, what if we had some type of like membership or subscription model? Like, kind of jokingly, but also just kind of like, what are we going to do? We've got to present in 18 hours. And we just said, you know what, that's it. You know, subscription, the membership model, that's already in the profession of architecture. Autodesk is causing us to do this. You know, Adobe's got their subscription. But leveraging something like a nominal fee from a small firm. And at this point, we didn't know it was small firms yet. We're like, okay, let's just, what could we offer as a membership, and what could you get from it? And Mike and I are from, our principals of two small firms, Abby, Desmond, Jared, and Katie. They were all with medium to larger firms. And we just started talking, and then we looked at the numbers, and 21,000 architecture firms in the country as of, I think, 2012 or 2014. 5% of those firms have 50 or more people and are considered large firms. That same 5% accounts for 52% of architectural billings. So that leaves 95% of firms with 42% of architectural billings in the country. And then you look at that 95% and you realize 77% have 9 or fewer people. And then that leaves the other with 10 to 49 was the medium size in this case. And so then we started thinking, okay, that gives us a much broader market reach if we can focus on the small to medium firms. So what, besides size, what differentiates them? And thinking about the resources that large firms typically have in-house. And this is where it was really instrumental having Jared, Abby, Desmond, and Katie there. Mike and I were kind of brainstorming what the issues are facing small firms. But they were able to say, well, you know, at our firm, we have a dedicated marketing department, and we have a dispute resolution component that is staffed by lawyers or attorneys. And wouldn't it be great if this nominal fee allowed you access to these resources as a small firm? So that was one portion of JAM that we kind of thought through and built out in our minds. And then the other one was, well, one of the things facing small firms is how do you hedge against perhaps a market downturn, or you have a week or two where our clients may not be making a decision because some of our clients are smaller. They may be on vacation, which means a decision is not being made for 10 days. Wouldn't it be great to have some type of network where a firm has on staff somebody who's wonderful at rendering or is perhaps a sustainability expert? They could connect with another firm in this database, in the JAM database, and share the expertise, because we're all members kind of working towards the same goal. So that was then the second component. So it's firm to firm, which is kind of connecting the firms. One of the other stories that we like to tell was Mike's firm in Tucson. They've done several poetry museums across the country. And, you know, it's a typology that I hadn't even heard of, but yeah. Thinking about when you get a request for proposal as a small firm, you check off a lot of those boxes more often than not, but then there may be one or two things where, well, we've never done that, or we don't have the expertise there. Wouldn't it be great if your JAM membership allowed you to filter through who are other members, and lo and behold, there's a poetry museum, and you can reach out to Mike's firm in Tucson and plug them in to your response to the request for proposal. And you have a team that checks off the boxes under your firm, but then also has a relationship with this other firm who does poetry museums, and their completed work is part of your proposal. So, firm to firm, firm to JAM being the resources that we would provide: marketing, legal advice like contract review, graphic design, things that small firms typically don't have in-house. And then thinking about the revenue, as it builds and as that revenue builds, a JAM to community component is one that we also don't want to lose sight of. And that one would be revenue gets earmarked for grants that member firms could apply for. And that money could offset pro bono services, or it could be used for a donation to a design collaborative in the community. So thinking through the three kind of components that make up JAM: firm to firm, firm to JAM, and JAM to community. Those are kind of the three things that we're working with. And that's kind of it in a nutshell. All to go back to the point that you started with, allowing firms to stay small, act big, and do good. You know, that's kind of the vision that we don't want to lose sight of. And once we got to that, somewhere between Friday night and early Saturday morning in the lobby of the hotel, we felt like we had something. And it was when we realized that as we were asking questions of ourselves, we had an answer because it fit within the framework of JAM. That's when we felt like we were onto something.
Yeah, you knew, and there was a story. It sort of all it started to tie together. You know, you had very specific, easily communicated ideas. Mm-hmm. Sort of all tied up around, you know, one big concept.
Yeah.
Yeah, and exactly. And that's why you won the competition with CVG as well. You submitted, you know, a business plan for JAM as a team, and you went through the semifinals. You went through the finals, and you won the thing. And it's a great idea.
Hey, well, we appreciate that. It was a grueling process, the CVG competition. And if you missed the opportunity to be part of 2019, I would absolutely encourage you, any firm out there, to do it in 2020. It had been on kind of my list of things to do for a while as a firm owner. But then JAM gave me the opportunity to kind of go after it and really kind of test some of the business plan and value propositions that we were suggesting.
Did you find the value of going through that process? Did it help sort of solidify what JAM was and how it was going to be launched?
Yeah, absolutely. The application phase allowed us to build out more of what we were considering, because we're all full-time architects, and thankfully things are good, as you and I were talking about before we hopped on, that things right now are pretty good. So architecture firms are lucky to be busy, but that doesn't give us as six architects a lot of time to build out the JAM side of things. So the CVG competition allowed us to really focus on, okay, this is our application. Hey, we made the semifinals. What else, how else can we augment? What else do we want to say? Oh, we've made the finals. Now we're down to five. Like, we need to be serious about this. And that was definitely helpful in moving, moving the process along.
Yeah. The current status, I'm not sure when this video is, or this audio is going to be released. But if you have the opportunity, because there are many people who register and then don't follow through with it.
Sure.
And so if you're listening, if you've already registered, because registration's closed, but if you've already registered and you are on the fence on whether you're going to spend the time on putting together your executive summary, mm-hmm. don't delay. Definitely do it. You can see, you know, what's happened with Christian and his team. People, even if you don't go to the next level, it's beneficial to go through the process.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree.
So what's the status of JAM now? That was about a year ago that you won the
about a year ago we went through the process. You and I met over the summer at the AA conference in New York. So right now we're in a beta phase where we are, as founders, personally curating our database. So we are reaching out to known contacts within our networks. And I think it's important to point out that Jared and I are both in Philadelphia. Abby is in Washington, D.C. Katie is in Detroit. Desmond is in Atlanta. And Mike is in Tucson. So we have a kind of like broad coalition of geographic areas, and we're leveraging our contacts and our involvement in professional organizations to reach out to small, medium firms and just kind of get in front of them and talk to them about what the benefits of JAM would be. So if any small firm or medium-sized firm, anyone who's listening that's interested in learning more about JAM, they can certainly find out more information through the website. They can submit their contact information, and one of the founders will personally follow up with a phone call. And we think that there's value in that because we're now able to kind of dig a little bit deeper into what makes the firm run, where they might need some help, and we're building out this database so that we can identify what resources our member firms need the most.
Right.
It's kind of, and the question comes up, well, what's your pricing structure? And one of the answers is, at the moment, we need the database.
Right.
And the information, because if I hedge my bets and say every firm that joins JAM is going to want contract review, so I go out and hire two full-time attorneys, that capital outlay is much different than 400 firms signing up, and perhaps they only need some graphic design help that could be handled with a local graphic designer on retainer. Right. And so that would completely skew the pricing model. So this beta phase is the personal involvement of the founders to kind of see where the synergies lie. And for some reason, we've had a lot of traction in California. Some larger firms have even reached out to say, how could we help support small firms?
Oh, wow. That's
yeah,
great.
which was one that I hadn't expected to feel that.
That might be something you can sort of leverage. That sort of build a program for that, mm-hmm. for large firms to sort of help support this network.
Yeah, and it's so fielding those phone calls, having the conversations is definitely a way for us to kind of understand what our member firms need.
Right. So if somebody who's listening, because we're all small firms listening right now, if we want to sort of get on your network and get into your mm-hmm. database, so you can learn from us and we can learn more about you, how do they do that?
They can go to the website, jamcollective.com, and there's a connect, and they can put in their information. They can also reach out over social media. We're active on Instagram and Twitter, and that would be the best way for them to reach out. And depending on the geographic location, firm size, the information that you share, the most relevant founder for that particular case will reach out, and we'll have a conversation.
All right, I'm super excited about JAM. I'm enthused about it. I I was inspired by it when I, you know, I was on the jury that selected the winners for that competition, and mm-hmm. I really was impressed with the idea and the team itself. So,
well, thank you. We appreciate that. We are proud of the effort so far. And we're kind of now we turn the page into 2019 saying this is the year that JAM becomes something. You know, we're kind of done gaining the momentum of the Innovation Lab, the CVG competition, and now it's time to make it something.
Great. Yeah. So before we wrap up here, what is one thing that a small firm architect can do today to build a better business for tomorrow?
I'll actually go back to something that you said about don't delay. If there's something that you recognize, because this is something that I was just talking to my students the other day. I teach a professional management course at Jefferson, and the idea that we are all problem solvers, we all have a degree in architecture or design, and that really sets us up for being able to creatively solve problems that are presented to us. And most of the time we get in front of the computer or a client and we're solving that particular problem. But if you open up your skill set to the business side of architecture, you can very easily identify what those problems might be, and then don't delay in trying to solve the problem. Right. Don't just say, we don't do this well, we don't do this well, we don't do this well. Because if you keep that up and keep that mindset up, you're never going to change it. So utilize the skills that you have as an architect and solve the problem. And, you know, you and I both know and the listeners know that sometimes you have to iterate through a design solution to get to the right one. But that's where we are best as architects. So take the skills that you have, apply them to business. And if you're doing something better tomorrow than you were doing it today, you're better off than you were, over the last 12 months or however long you've been kicking it around in your mind.
Very, very good advice. We actually just published an article written by Steve Wintner on the blog, who it's called the simple power of 1%. I think it was something like that. And it's about if you just do things 1% better, they compound and they become significant.
Yeah.
It's a really interesting article. He actually looks at it in terms of dollars, that if you if you have net revenue of just 1% more or you reduce expenses just 1% less, to see those numbers add up, it's pretty interesting and impressive. And so don't delay to make those changes. You know, that if you don't have the data to pursue something that you want to pursue this year and you just keep pushing it off because you don't have the data, well, you're not going to have the data next year either if you don't start collecting the data now.
Yeah.
And so a very, very wise advice there. So the website for your architecture firm, if anybody wants to go check you out there, is pjarch.com. Uh-huh. And JAM Collective is JAMB, as in boy, JAMBcollective.com. What does JAM stand for?
So JAM is actually an acronym of the founders' last names. And we have a couple extra letters in there, but they all are J's or M's, A's or B's. So we actually went there with business cards, with JAM, and two J's, two M's or a B, an extra B. And then we clarified it because we didn't know what we were. We just wanted a name for ourselves. We like the idea of JAM, but it kind of gets to the other motto or slogan within JAM is that we connect, support, and open new doors. And that reinforces the JAM with a B ethos of an architectural door jam.
Yeah. Very good.
Yeah.
So jamcollective.com. Go check that out. Again, on Instagram and Twitter, at JAM Collective. Just tweet them out. Say thank you. If you have any questions, you can probably grab an answer there as well if you're interested.
Yeah.
Christian, this was a great conversation. I appreciate you for spending some time with me. I know you're busy. We've rescheduled this discussion.
Yes, we have.
Multiple times, which is good, which means that you've been busy.
Yeah,
I'm glad that we finally had that opportunity to talk about this and to share your collective idea for JAM.
Well, thanks, Mark, for having me, and I hope to hear from any and all of your listeners. Always up for a conversation, and look forward to hearing from them.
All right. Thanks for being here at Entree Architect Podcast. So episode 259, what do you think of that idea? What do you think about networking small firms and providing some support for them? I think Jam Collective is a great idea. I can't wait to see it develop and to hear more progress. We'll have Christian come back and talk about that sometime. I would love to do that. But if this episode was something that you found interesting, send it to a friend. It's entrearchitect.com/episode259. That's the link. Share it. Post it on Twitter. Put it on Instagram. Put it on Facebook. Pop it into an email and send it to your best friend. Say, hey, this was one that you should listen to. entrearchitect.com/episode259. And Entree Architect membership. You should be there. It's a new masterclass expert training webinar every month. Access to our entire training archive, more than 40 training sessions, more than 40 hours of training sessions inside Entree Architect membership. Access to all our resources, including hybrid proposal, the foundations documents, the Get Focused course. It's all in there for free as a member. Once you're a member, you have unlimited access to all of that. And an invitation to join our private Entree Architect member forum powered by Slack. Training, resources, and that private community for small firm architects. It's what you need. It's where the Entree Architects are gathering to build their small businesses. That's the Entree Architect membership. Join hundreds of your fellow entrepreneur architects and me inside Entree Architect membership. Gain full instant access today right there on the homepage at entrearchitect.com. My name is Mark Arlepage, and I am an entrepreneur architect, and I encourage you to build a better business so you can be a better architect. Love, learn, and share what you know. Thanks for listening. Have a great week. Are you NCARB certified yet? Join the network of over 45,000 architects who have the NCARB certificate to expand your professional reach. By becoming NCARB certified, you are demonstrating that you've met the national standards for licensure, a qualification that can be an important factor for firms when hiring and promoting. Certificate holders have a streamlined path to apply for a reciprocal license in all 55 U.S. jurisdictions, as well as access to an extensive library of free continuing education courses. Learn more today at ncarb.org.